Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 1, King Sudumna becomes a woman. Text number 19. So this is a ninth canto, is especially a story canto. So interesting stories too. I think if we put this story on Facebook, we'll get a lot of likes nowadays. That the Hare Krishna movement is, it appears to be very conservative or whatever it appears like, but it's also quite progressive. Translation. The most powerful great-grandfather of Vishistha, after hearing these words of Manu, understood the discrepancy on the part of the priest as he spoke as follows to the son of the sun god. So there's obviously a different time. I don't think most of us are going to meet either the sun god or his son. He must be a very special person to be. If you're the son of the sun god, you must be quite a special personality. The discrepancy in the objective is due to your priest's deviation from the original purpose. However, by my own prowess, I shall give you a good son. Shukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikshit, after the most famous and powerful Vashistha made this decision, he offered prayers to the Supreme Person, Vishnu, to transform him into a male. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, being pleased with Vashistha, gave him the benediction he desired. Thus he was transformed into a very fine male named Sudumna. Thus Ila was transformed into a very fine male named Sudumna. So here we can see that if one actually believes in Krishna and asks him in the right way, he can do anything. In other words, we're trying to do so many different things, we're desiring so many different things. But if we actually ask the right person in the right way, everything can be done. Because he may not do anything. We may ask for something that he knows is not beneficial for either ourselves or for others. But if we have something beneficial that we really want, and we approach Krishna, then he can do anything. Prabhupada said, if you have some real problem, you can go before the Panchatattva and say, my dear Panchatattva, this is my problem. Of course, don't take a whole list with you. Here's a book. Could you please read it? I'll come back tomorrow. Get back the book. Add a few more things to it. But Krishna will take care of things if we actually sincerely want them. So our process of Krishna consciousness is simply to develop, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, engage all your intelligence in me, thus you'll live with me always without a doubt. But if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regular principles of devotional service, and this way try to develop a desire to obtain me. Our whole process is just learning how to fix our minds on Krishna. That's the whole thing. As soon as we fix our mind upon Krishna, of course in the right consciousness, in the right way, with the right mood, then the result is that we come under Krishna's control and Krishna comes under the soul's control.
Our control.
Loving control. Now, we don't have much to offer to Krishna because Krishna is already quite happy. He doesn't really need our little bit of bliss to make himself happy. It's not that Krishna is sitting there morose and thinking, when is that soul going to come to me so I can become happy? Now, Krishna is unlimitedly happy, but we can add a little bit to his unlimited happiness, and then we get unlimited happiness in return. So it's a good deal. You give a little speck of gold and you get and Krishna reciprocates by giving you the whole gold mine. It's a good trade. Good business. In case you're into the business. Spiritual business. So here, just by offering some prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he received the benediction. Krishna agreed to turn Ila into a male, King Sudumna. O King Parikshit, the hero Sudumna, accompanied by a few ministers and associates, and riding on a horse brought from Sindhu Pradesha, once went into the forest to hunt. He wore armor and was decorated with bows and arrows. And he was very beautiful. While following the animals and killing them, he reached the northern part of the forest. So where is this taking place? Does anyone know? Yes, a different part of Aradvarsha that we're in, by the way. Because does anyone know what like Aradvarsha looks like? Anyone have any idea where we are? Where are you? Well, I don't know. What?
Many
islands, yes. I don't know. No, there's not many islands. That's Bhumandala. Aradvarsha is, Varsha means what? It's just one part of the Jambudweep. Why is it called Jambudweep? There's a tree that has jambu fruits in case you're hungry. It's a little hard to find, but if you get really hungry, you can find jambu fruit. Therefore it's called Jambudweep. Dweep means island. So we're on the island called Jambudweep. And what's in the middle of Jambudweep? If you go there, what's in the middle?
Meru.
Yes, Mount Meru. What is Meru made out of?
Gold.
Yes, it's made of gold. And what's its price? Right now it's 1,800 euros per an ounce. And how big is Mount Meru? Does anyone know? 100,000 yojanas high, which is 800,000 miles high in the air, which is around 1,200,000 kilometers high in the air, made out of gold. So if anyone feels that they need some money, if you can simply take a little excursion to Jambudweep, find a couple of pebbles at the bottom, take an elephant to bring it back with you, you can have tons of gold. But obviously we can't walk over there right now. We don't even know which way to go. And it appears in current Kali Yuga, the other parts of Aradvarsha are not accessible. That we're on the edge of the Aradvarsha. Like the Aradvarsha is now divided into three as far as I know. And eight other Varshas surrounding Jambudweep, surrounding Mount Meru. And we're in the part of Aradvarsha which is on the outside. So we're next to the ocean of salt water. But if you go more deeply inside, then you can actually come eventually to Mount Meru as we find out here. There in the north, so that's, we're in the south right now. But in the north where we are, there's Mount Meru. In the north at the bottom of Mount Meru is the forest known as Sukumara, where Lord Shiva always enjoys with Uma. Sudumna entered that forest. O King Parikshit, as soon as Sudumna, who was expert in subduing enemies, entered the forest, he saw himself transformed into a female and his horse transformed into a mare. When his followers also saw their identities transformed, and their sex reversed, they were all very morose and just looked at one another. Maharaj Pariksit said, "O most powerful Brahmana, why was this place so empowered, and who made it so powerful? Kindly answer this question, for I am very eager to hear about this." Sukadev Goswami answered, "Great saintly persons who strictly observe the spiritual rules and regulations, and whose own effulgence dissipated all the darkness of all directions, once came to see Lord Shiva in that forest. When the goddess Ambika saw the great saintly persons, she was very much ashamed, because at that time she was naked. She immediately got up from the lap of her husband and tried to cover her breast. Seeing Lord Shiva and Parvati engage in sexual affairs, all the great saintly persons immediately desisted from going further and departed from the ashram of Narayan. Thereafter, just to please his wife, Lord Shiva said, "Any male entering into this place shall immediately become a female." So text 33. Tatakurdvam vanam yatadvai purusha varjayantihi sachanuchara samyukta vichachara vanadvanam tatha urdvam. From that time onward, vanam, forest, tat, that, vai, in particular, purusha, males, varjayanti, do not enter, he, indeed, sa, sudumna, in the form of a woman, cha, also, anuchara samyukta, accompanied by his companions, vichachara, walked, vanat, vanam, within the forest from one place to another. Since that time, no male had entered that forest. But now King Sudumna, having been transformed into a female, began to walk with his associates from one forest to another. So, even in this Jambudweep, this part of Varsha, there are many interesting places. Some of them are good to visit, some of them are not so good to visit. Depends who you are. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 2:22, it is said, Vasamsi jiranani atavahaya nivani grinati naro prani tatashariani vihara jiranani nani samyati navani dehi. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. The body is just like a dress, and here this is proved. Sudumna, and his associates were all male, which means that their souls were covered by a male dress. But now they became female, which means that their dress was changed. The soul, however, remains the same. It is said that by modern medical treatment, a male can be transformed into a female, and a female into a male. The body, however, has no connection with the soul. The body can be changed either in this life or in the next. Thereafter, one who has knowledge of the soul and how the soul transmigrates from one body to another does not pay attention to the body, which is nothing but a covering dress. Pandita Samadarshanaha. Such a person sees the soul, which is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he is a Samadarshi, a learned person. The Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as other literatures, expand on the two conceptions, the eternality of the soul and the difference between the soul and material nature, and the Supreme Lord, and ultimately our relationship with Krishna's energy, either the internal energy, Yogamaya, or the external energy known as Mahamaya. And here we find that Mahamaya has much more variety than we're used to in this tiny little insignificant place we call home. In any case, whether we go up to the heavenly planets or down to the lower planet, they're simply the same thing, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that, actually, what does he say? I can take a guess. Kshetras, Kshetrajna, Jnanam, Yatajna, no, this is the wrong one. So, in chapter 15, well, that would be an easy one. It's just this one's a little hard. Yavat sanjayate kinchit satvam stavara jangamam kshetra shagriyat gyanam yattaj gyanam utamama. O son of Artha, you should... Yavat sanjayate kinchit. Whatever you see in existence, both moving and non-moving, is said to be only a combination of the knower of the field and the field. And that's it. In other words, things are much more simple than we imagine them to be. There's ourselves, the soul, and then there is the field in which we're existing in. But we're not part of the field. We're the soul who's aware of the field. Now, unfortunately, we're living in Kali Yuga where people have forgotten Krishna. And therefore, forgetting Krishna, instead of focusing one's attention on Krishna, everyone's focusing one's attention on the external world. Which means the thing that's most close to us is this body and the mind. And therefore, that's what most people are focused on. Now, it just so happens that whatever body we get, whatever mind we have, we're never going to be happy with it because it's not meant for happiness. It's meant to make us unhappy. And if one is trying to become happy, and what does happiness mean? Happiness begins with realizing that we're eternal. Unless one realizes one is eternal, one cannot be happy. It is not possible. It doesn't matter how much we surround ourselves with material objects. Still, since we're always afraid of death, since we don't understand that we're eternal, naturally we'll be afraid of death. As soon as we forget who we actually are, which is called vidya, then we're put into asmita, which means we're put into ignorance, and along with ignorance, since we have to do something, we're given a false ego, namely this body. And when we get a false ego, included and free with the package is attachment and aversion. Whatever body we get, we're going to be attached to something and averse to something else. For instance, if you once see a beautiful woman on the street, one may become attracted to that woman. If he's a male, I wouldn't say normal, at least the kind of male. And then there is a dog may see the same woman. He may be attracted in a different way. He may be thinking of his next meal. And a brahmachari who is in Brahman, he may see something different. Like when Shukadeva Goswami passed by the naked damsels who were bathing in the lake, he didn't affect him at all because he didn't see only the external body. He saw the actual soul. And the soul, seeing the soul was much more significant than seeing the external body. Not only seeing, but we have to understand that one who's actually in transcendence, they have a whole experience. A whole different energy they're absorbed in, a spiritual energy, which is completely on a different level of bliss, pleasure. And therefore, one is not attracted to trying to come down to the inferior methodologies of enjoyment because one is already enjoying on the spiritual platform. So, in Kali Yuga, when people are devoid of inner experience of Krishna, either internally or externally, who are bewildered by simply experiencing the pushing of their senses, the vegams, of the tongue, the belly, the genitals, the mind, anger, words, one who's experiencing all these pushings, then the result is, that's all they can think about, is how to satisfy the pushings. And although there's not really a big difference between the pushings that a woman experiences and the pushings a man experiences, if a man is hungry, it's not like a whole different experience than one if a woman is hungry. But it may take a slightly different, subtle form. In other words, as the material world is a reflection of the real world, so in the real world, the spiritual world, we say real world, it's not that this world doesn't exist, but we know it's only, it exists as a combination of Krishna's external energies, which is ultimately his internal energy also, his Brahman energy, but exists as a, like a mirage in the desert for the soul. The energies have combined together in such a way as to make it seem that what we're seeing is factual, just like if one sees a snake, a rope, and thinks it's a snake, it's not that the rope isn't there, it's just that we're seeing it wrongly. We think it's a snake when it's actually a rope. So we're seeing the material world which is there and we're experiencing it, we're just seeing it in the wrong way. And therefore we become thinking that this is all in all, this is all we can experience. And to keep one attracted, then, because we came here to imitate Radha and Krishna, therefore we're given different forms. Forms similar to Radha, or forms similar to Krishna, and 8,400,000 species of life. There's also a male cockroach and a female cockroach. I don't know exactly what their romantic life is like, but there's some romance even between the cockroaches. Otherwise, you couldn't get little cockroaches. So that's going on in all the species of life. So there's no problem of romance in the material world, so-called romance. But actually, it's just a combination of the senses with their objects, according to Prahlad Maharaj, and my to naidi grimadi sukham hitucham kunduyanena eva turar eva dukadukam. It's like compared to the rubbing of two hands together to relieve an itching sensation, the happiness of sex life. But there is happiness. If you have an itch and you scratch it, you get some happiness. It feels pleasurable. If you're cold and you enter into a warm room, there's some happiness there. It's not that it doesn't exist, but it's not the ultimate happiness, that's all. And it's only temporary. Therefore, one should understand, whatever body we put on, it's not good and it's not bad. It's just the body we're in. What's good is if we utilize it for Krishna's service. Anybody, strotram, chakshu sparshanam cha, rasanam granam eva cha, adishtayam anakchanyam vishan upasevate. That when the living entity enters into a body, he gets a certain set of senses. Beginning with chakshus. Shrotram. Shrotram means our ears. So everyone got a set of ears. Now we love our ears because we can hear through them, but we can hear without these material ears also. We have our spiritual ears, but we've gotten these set of ears, shrotram, chakshu, set of eyes, sparshanam, we've got this skin for touching, rasanam, our tongue, sparshanam, avacha, and our Granam Avacha, our sense of smell, which are all grouped around the mind, and thus we enjoy a particular set of sense objects. So we are the tiny little soul, and emanating around us, or covering us, is first is the mind, and the intelligence, and the false ego. And through those we enjoy, through these senses, we enjoy different types of sense activity. In any body we get. Now, whatever body we get, there's going to be a certain type of pleasure. Human form of life is not the best form to enjoy in. If one wants to enjoy the whatever sensations come from the material nature, the human form of life is one of the worst forms we can get. Sorry to disappoint everyone. Because our senses are quite limited. Just like we like prasadam. Everyone here likes prasadam, or else we wouldn't be here. But how much we can eat is very limited. And even if one is young and has a good appetite, it's still limited. As it says, our stomach is only 2 fistfuls. It may expand in the course of time. In our devotional lives, it may expand. Even faster than our Krishna consciousness. But it's still limited. And even our smell, generally, you know, after you walk into a room where there's some incense burning, after a few minutes, you just don't even notice it's there anymore. At least I don't. I don't know if anyone else does. It's not that you're in the room for 3 hours and you're smelling the incense. And all the other senses, how long, you know, people, they go to the museum and look at a painting, do they stare there for 3 hours? No, they can only get so much pleasure from looking at the painting. And even if they take it home, they don't spend the rest of their life looking at it. So it's limited. Yehi samsparsha boga dukkha yoni evate. But we get a certain set of senses, and human form of life is specifically limited so that we could try to focus our consciousness on Krishna. So everyone has an equal opportunity to focus their mind upon Krishna. There's no extra price when you come into the Hare Krishna movement. They don't charge you anything extra for thinking about Krishna. It's free. And you can do it anytime. And if you're thinking about Krishna, generally the devotees don't catch you and say, I caught you thinking about Krishna. Stop thinking about it. No. Hopefully the devotees encourage each other to talk about, and to remember Krishna, to become Krishna conscious. That's why we're here. Besides the prasadam, we're also here to remember Krishna, to come through the process. And what's the process for us? Sadharam apita, no. Swadharma viguna paradharma sunistita. Shreyan swadharma viguna paradharma sunistita. Shreyadharma nididam shreyak paradharma bhayavaha. That is better to one perform one's own activity, even imperfectly, than to try to perform someone else's duty. Even if you fail one's own duty, is better than to perform some other's duty, because to do some other's duty is dangerous. So Shreya Swadamo Viguna. So we have to find out what our duty is. Now it just so happens that it's rather easy, at least our initial duty. Most of us can see what's the difference between a man and a woman. Although as Kali Yuga progresses, it's becoming more difficult. Matter of fact, people can't even, they have like 72 designations now. So you have to go to college to figure out all these designations. Because normal, simple people just see men and women. Other people see 72 designations. So, Shreyan Swadamo Viguna. So, knowing one's duty, then we know what we're supposed to do. Now, of course, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we have multiple duties in terms of pleasing Krishna. And everyone more or less does most of the same duties, namely to chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, you know, we can worship the deities, hear about Srimad Bhagavatam, all these are duties we can do, any male, female, or even in between, even any one of those 72 designations can also do that. There's no problem. The only thing is, if we want, as a man and woman, if we're not completely on the transcendental platform, then one may want to become a householder. And as a householder, then you have to know, especially, what a woman is supposed to do and a man is supposed to do. If you're not a householder, it's not such a big problem. But if you're a householder, then it's improper, generally speaking, for a man to try to give birth to a child. Although they're trying to do that. Generally, it's much easier for a woman to do that. Because this may be controversial. But so far, it's not so controversial. Now in America, they're trying to make artificial milk so that a man can breastfeed. As if, you know, that's a big accomplishment. Because it's already going on, just like the scientists may invent a blade of grass, spend billions of dollars, and somehow or another get the energy together to make one blade of grass. Of course, maybe a soul will enter into it, and they'll get the Nobel Prize for creating a blade of grass. But if you pick up a ton of grass and give it, you know, people are not interested. There's an unlimited amount of grass everywhere. But if one scientist can create one blade of grass, then he's given a Nobel Prize and fame forever. He created a blade of grass. But the person who created unlimited grass, he's ignored and denied. Useless. No sense of mentioning him. Similarly, a woman's body is perfectly in relationship to feeding children, producing children, etc., etc. A man's body is created in such a way as to be perfect for a certain type of maintenance of the child and protection, etc., etc. So it's already there. What's the sense of trying to change it? The only sense is that no one's satisfied with what they have. And a man is trying to, nowadays, because of lack of Krishna consciousness, exploit. And the woman is trying to exploit, and they're both being exploited by Maya, illusion. And therefore they're unhappy. But if they become Krishna conscious and stop trying to exploit each other, try to perform their actual duties, not only the woman is supposed to perform her duty, but the man is supposed to perform his duty also. Not that the woman, they get married, and the man says to the woman, "Surrender, you're a woman." No, she could say, "Surrender, you're a man. You're supposed to do what a man's supposed to do." The man's not supposed to exploit the woman, and the woman's not supposed to exploit the man. Unfortunately, there's no training, and even if they're trained for millions of years, that if there's no Krishna consciousness, it'll never work. Because one is forced by Maya to exploit within the absence of Krishna consciousness, in the absence of God consciousness, one will be forced to exploit others in one way or another. No matter how much one may put on a show of being, you know, sensitive or feeling or considerate, it's only a mechanism. Without Krishna consciousness, it's a mechanism for exploitation. Therefore, if we become Krishna conscious and we introduce it to others, then these bodily concepts of life will be, at least, if there's enough Krishna consciousness, we'll know how to use our body properly. So that we'll be productive in producing more Krishna consciousness. The production of children, etc., the production of food, whatever we're producing, is all aimed at helping us become suitable for serving Krishna. That's all. And if we're suitable for serving Krishna, and we serve Krishna, then we become successful in this lifetime. And then we can actually appreciate whatever body is there in the 8,400,000 species of life can be engaged in Krishna's service. The cow can be engaged in Krishna's service. The bull can be engaged in Krishna's service. The animals in the farm can be engaged in Krishna's service. And if you're as powerful as Lord Chaitanya, you can even get the tigers and the deer to chant Hare Krishna. But we should start, as Prabhupada said, we're not as powerful as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so at least we should try to get the two-legged animals to chant Hare Krishna. And that will create a real society where people can know what their duties are and be happy just doing their duty. After all, the happiness of material life, namely eating, sleeping, mating, defending, can be equally enjoyed by any species, anyone. But if one is Krishna conscious, then one can actually enjoy on another platform of consciousness, which makes everything else seem insignificant. And therefore, on that platform, everyone is equally eligible to get the unlimited happiness, and one is equally if one is serving Krishna, one becomes equally worshipable to everyone else who is serving Krishna. Therefore, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that all the servants of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which means all the servants, man, woman, or whoever else was serving Krishna, they're all equally worshipable because they're serving Krishna. But I'm just going to explain some of the prominent devotees so that we get some idea about what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is actually all about. But in the Sankirtan, when they're doing Harinam, when they're doing serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, when he's there, and the Harinam is going, everyone is feeling unlimited pleasure and bliss. They're in an ocean of bliss. Doesn't matter who you are. And that's actually the perfection of life. Not becoming a more powerful man or a more powerful woman or whatever else it is. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
There is a question by Avadhuta Roy Prabhu. In the Mahabharata, it is said one should speak to the enemy meekly, but should actually be heartless. One should speak with a smile, but never reveal one's true nature by performing a harsh act. It seems, as per this rule, a kshatriya cannot become free from duality. What do you think?
Well, what you do, I don't know what the rule, I don't know this rule that speak meekly to your enemy. But anyhow, whatever the kshatriya's rules are, so you can follow them. It doesn't mean that you have to be in Maya when you're doing it. King Priyavrata, he wanted to become a brahmachari, complete celibacy. And Narada Muni was instructing him. He was also a Naishitika brahmachari. But Swayabhuvamanu, he wanted to retire from his position, so he wanted his grandson to take over the universe. So Lord Brahma came, Indra came, Shiva came, Swayambhuvamanu came, and Brahma asked Priyavrata to take over the realm of the universe, the ruling of the universe. So he had to get married, because you can't perform sacrifice properly unless you're married, because both energies have to be there in the sacrifice. But although he was married, because he was married, he had to act like a husband. He couldn't say, oh, stay away from me, lady. I'm a brahmachari. Don't touch me. No, he had to act like a householder. Although his consciousness was transcendental. But he acted as a perfect householder. And his wife acted as a perfect wife. He acted as a perfect husband. And she dressed very nicely and gave him, affectionate glances, and he accepted them as the inspiration to rule over the universe. But within himself, he always remained completely detached and aloof. So one could be anything. Yudhisthira Maharaj, Arjuna, they were all Kshatriyas, but they were also fully conscious of Krishna. And therefore, although externally they did whatever was seemed to go on for the pastimes, but internally they were always fully aloof from the whole thing, completely absorbed in serving Krishna in a different, completely different energy. So we should know what our rules and regulations are for whatever we're doing, but within ourselves we should always be Krishna conscious. Therefore, in that verse, Shrayan Swadhamo Viguna, it says that as long as one is in the Bali concept of life, one should continue to do his duty, but at the same time have a full sense of Krishna consciousness. So we're not trying to change our duty, we're trying to find out right now what it is, and at the same time have a full sense of Krishna consciousness while we're doing it. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, you said that in Harinam we should feel, devotees feel unlimited bliss, and what to do if you don't feel this bliss? Or
well, ask Krishna why you're not feeling it. He'll give some answer. Usually our main problem is we're offending devotees all the time. It's just like our second nature. And sometimes, you know, we make a mistake and we appreciate someone or something. We appreciate what the devotees are doing. We actually have some faith in Krishna. And inadvertently we chant Hare Krishna with actually some feeling, some concentration, and then we're blissful. So it happens sometimes. So we should just be patient, and in the course of time Krishna will reveal to us what we have to improve in, what we have to give up, and we have to improve, and then things will be, one day we will be in Harinam, Sankirtan, and we'll be blissful all the time. But we should just look forward to finding out what's the right thing to do and what's the wrong thing to do. Do the right thing, avoid the wrong things, and just pray to Krishna that we can get little drops here and there. So we get inspired to go on until one day we're completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. All right. Kuala Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.